CBS Live show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Deddy, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity set up to support people with cancer in learning about and utilising integrated medicine to support their own well-being and recovery. One of the events we've been privileged to be involved with over the last 20 years has been the launch of a new theory of cancer, the cell suppression theory, developed single-handedly by Mark Linton, a citizen scientist, someone who himself had cancer in his 20s and was dismayed by the lack of understanding of the disease, and so set out on an eight-year journey of research to see what he could find out. Shortly after the launch of the theory, I recorded six consecutive radio shows to go through the theory in detail for the public, and these are still available. I'll give you more details at the end of this show. But now, it's about 2 years since the launch, and Mark is my guest again today to bring us up to date on progress. Hi Mark, welcome back to the Yes to Life show.
Hi Robin, thank you for having me back on. Looking forward to the chat.
So, a lot of water has gone under the bridge since we did six episodes of the show presenting your cell suppression theory, and that was 2 years ago. The first of those episodes was number 400, and I've just broadcast number 500 a little while ago. So anyway, I'm keen to cover all the developments of the last 2 years. So maybe we could start with your book. It was published shortly after our broadcast. How's it been received?
Yeah, thank you. Very well, actually. A lot of interest from scientists, a lot of interest from clinicians, and a lot of feedback from them. Very positive. And I hear that a number of clinicians are discussing the theory and the implications of that for treatment with the patients. So this is very, very encouraging. And likewise with patients as well, because I've got quite a big following now on my Facebook group. And a lot of the patients in there are downloading my free PDF synopsis, which is available on my website, that really breaks down what the theory is about in about 10 pages. They're taking that and they're giving that to their oncologists and family and friends. So just to encourage them to have a look at it. And a number of them have come to me to say a very similar thing. They give it to their oncologists to say, at our next meeting, I would like to discuss the implications of this and what you think about it for treatment purposes, because I want to align myself with this perspective. So it's very encouraging and very interesting from all perspectives, really.
And is anybody getting any kind of positive stories to tell from their oncologist?
Yeah, I've got quite a number of people feeding back to me that my theory has changed their trajectory with their disease. So the markers have dropped. And just today, I've just messaged someone who's asked to come into the group. And she just mentioned that, I can't remember the exact word she used, but it was the effect of, since reading your book, I credit your research to my success.
Okay.
So I've messaged her to find out exactly what it was she employed. But yeah, there's been a large number of people who've come across to me and mentioned that at conferences, as well as just not so long ago, I was in public on holiday and I had a gentleman come over to me, recognize me, and said some similar things.
Amazing. That's great.
I wasn't expecting that at all.
No. Okay. And what about the international circuit? Is it making it in other countries?
Yes, there's actually more interest in America than there is the UK. It's all over the world, but primarily it's America first, probably around 30% interest and 25% interest from the UK, and that it's spread around the rest of the world. But I think that's probably down to a bigger audience with some of the podcasts I've done with those American-based podcasts.
Mm. Okay, well, maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. That's the kind of way that the word gets out these days. Books may be a little bit old hat in some ways. Podcasts are definitely flavor of the time. So what's happening now?
Well, I really started the launch last year in around May time. where I landed my first big podcast. Well, aside from the interviews we did with yourself and Yes to Life, of course, which was huge, but I managed to get on the podcast with Dave Asprey. So he was quite big in the biohacker health space. And then since then, I've done a spin-off of at least around 12 to 13 smaller podcasts. And yeah, it's just been an interesting experience.
Yeah, it's quite a thing to launch something completely new into the cancer space, because there's already so much noise and there's so many opinions out there. And just to be heard is a major ordeal, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. There is a lot of noise. So I think to be heard, you've got to have something different and a different approach. And even though I have got a different approach, it is I'm finding it a little bit difficult to get the information out there. But that will just come with time and me learning how to market the book better. I think that's one of the things. You do something interesting like this, and it's taken a long time, 10 years really, to get to this point. But then you've got to learn a whole new skill in marketing, which is
Absolutely, a process.
I'm now going through. So I'm paying a couple of guys to help me market, but you've got to learn a whole new skill. And, you know, it's interesting, a little bit frustrating, because it takes me away from doing more research and pushing the project forward further, but it's a necessary thing to do to try and disseminate the theory. But a lot of the sales on the book and the interest that I'm getting is through word of mouth at the moment, which is fantastic, because that's
really good.
You know, that there's a backing behind what I'm doing. I've got some really good reviews on the book on Amazon, nearly all 5-star reviews. So that's fantastic. So yeah, the support's there, and it's really great. It's just going to take a little bit of time to get it known throughout the world, I suppose.
Yeah. And I spotted a bit of recognition for the book coming in from third parties.
Yes. I've won 2 literary awards very recently, one in 2023 and one in 2024, and a Health UK radio show award, which was voted for by the public, which was very nice. I didn't expect that at all. So it was very nice to be nominated, and very nice to win that too. So that just, provides me with a bit of recognition for the quality, I suppose, of the work that I've produced, as well as the ease of reading of the material. I mean, it must seem quite daunting to a lot of cancer patients, the size of the book, because it is rather large. There are a number of references in the back. So the back of the book is rather large. And that must really put patients off. I understand that. But it in recognition with these awards, it's nice to have it acknowledged that it is well written for the layperson, to make it as simplistic and easy to understand as possible.
Yeah, that's a really important feature. I mean, Professor Seyfried's groundbreaking book is just not the average person's bedside reading. They've really struggled to even understand what it says. So it's definitely not the case with your book. It's accessible, and it's great that you've written it for the person with cancer, basically. So that's one of its best features, really, because cancer science is complicated. There's no getting away from it. So being able to convey the important points in a way that anyone can understand is, it's a bit of a challenge, but one worth the attempt. How about languages? I also understand that you're beginning to break the English barrier and get to other places.
Yeah. So. Well, the interesting thing just before we reach that is that when I Google my name, I come up with a lot of articles. So that there's a lot of people around the world that are actually writing articles on the theory. I didn't realize that. So that's another way that it's being kind of disseminated. And through that process, someone contacted me from a Belgian publisher where they'd read an article in French about my theory.
Right.
And they were interested. So been in contact with them over the last year. And since I've done a publishing deal with the Belgian company to translate the book into French, and that is due out in June this year.
Okay, very good. So we launched the theory together at our Cancer Through Another Lens event, which is a little more than 2 years ago. For listeners who don't know about your work, who may be listening for the first time, can you briefly explain what we did at that event and what came out of it?
Yes. Well, when I first originally got in contact with you to explain my theory, you proposed this very event. And it did make my knees wobble at the time, but I agreed to it. And what you proposed was for me to discuss and debate my theory in front of a panel of 10 cancer experts. And we subsequently worked together over the year and a half. Thank you for that work, by the way. We managed to get the event going, and we did it in front of a live audience of just over 200 medical professionals for 6 hours. You hosted with co-host of Dr. Robert Verkerk, and we went through all the research, and the participants were able to vote on the confidence in different aspects of my research. And then that culminated in the end of the event with a final vote of around, I think it was about 7.4 out of 10 in acceptance and acknowledgement of the research that I performed and the theory itself, that it is something that I've shone a light on a different aspect, a different way of looking at the disease, and that it needs to be tested in a scientific manner.
Yeah, that's right. 7.4, that's the figure it gave, which for a brand new idea about cancer, of course, is stunningly good. In order for it to achieve that high, many people of quite significant standing were giving you 10. So a major achievement. So for anyone who doesn't actually know this, your background as a graphic designer, the step from that world into the world of cancer science is nothing if not big. Can you describe how this has been?
Yeah, it's been quite a leap. It's definitely a different world. It's been interesting. It's been strange. And it's been exciting at the same time. Sometimes I feel like I'm living in a movie. Well, yeah, it's been good. It's been nice because it's been acknowledged and accepted by a lot of leading scientists and clinicians. And it's been humbling to be able to spend time talking to these fantastic people doing the job that they are in such a difficult field. So yeah, it's been an adjustment. I'm not used to the podcasting, but I'm getting used to it now. And it's been an adjustment leaving behind the colouring in, that is the graphic design side of things, and thinking on a completely different level about health, disease in general, and interacting with the public as well. And going to conferences and just being able to, it's been nice to be able to express all the research that I've been doing over the last 8 to 10 years and talk about it, because there was a very long time while I was doing the research when I created the theory. It took me about 8 years to create the theory. Well, I was pretty much on my own and in my own head, laying all this information down without much feedback or being able to talk to anyone. So there was a point at which where I probably did sound a bit crazy to a number of people. As soon as they asked me about it, I would just speak and speak and speak. There was this release that I needed. So I probably scared a few people.
Yeah, right.
But now I've calmed down, I've been able to have that release, and it's just been, it's nice now to have that interaction.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Just for listeners who haven't already heard, they still are available. The 6 interviews I did with you, so 6 consecutive radio shows to discuss this very important topic, which it merited that kind of in-depth talk about every aspect of it. So you can go back and listen to those if you'd like to. Just go to the radio show on the Yes to Life website, yestolife.org.uk, and do a search under Mark's name and you'll find them all. They're a good listen. But just briefly now, I mean, anybody who didn't hear those is maybe wondering, well, what were you doing in the back bedroom for 8 years there on your own researching cancer as a complete layperson? How come?
So I developed cancer at the age of 28, and I just had questions about the disease. Luckily for me, I had it removed. But during that process of over about 3 or 4 months when I was diagnosed having it surgically removed, I delved into the research. I wanted to know what particular genetic mutations had occurred and if I could prevent that from happening in the future. And I just found that there was a lot of confusion in the industry and no one could really tell me the specific mutations, even though it's presented as if genetic mutations are the underlying cause of the disease. And during this process, I discovered that there were other theories of cancer. I didn't realize this was the case. And then that opened up a Pandora's box of further research. And it made me realize that there were other interpretations of cancer, that the underlying cause of cancer is actually unknown, and that scientists are still trying to ascertain the origin of the disease. And with that comes different approaches to treatment, because treatments are developed from cancer theory. So I initially did that research, realized that this was the case, but then because I'd had my cancer removed and was given the all clear, essentially, I didn't carry on my research until a friend of mine a few years later developed cancer herself. And because of my prior research, I thought I'll do some more research. And that led on to a year's worth of research. Unfortunately, she passed away. She went down the conventional route. And, you know, I was somewhat angry at the end of that. And I'd done all this research. I didn't feel like people were listening to what I was saying. And I felt there was something in what I discovered. So I carried on my research further, just in case family and friends were to get cancer, I could document this information and provide it to them. One thing led to another. I got kind of lost in the research. I enjoyed doing it, so that was a good thing. And then before I knew it, 8 years passed, I recognized a significant light bulb moment that related to the metabolic theory and the Warburg effect, that actually identified a potential other mechanism that could be causing the disease. And then from there, I developed a brand new theory of cancer.
Shortly after which you contacted me. I well remember the 4-hour Zoom call we had where you just gave me the short version.
Yeah, that was very lengthy.
Yeah. Well, it was good. No, I don't get called out by people with new theories of cancer every day. And it was quite a surprise. And I was majorly skeptical, as you can imagine, but I was prepared to give it a listen. And I found myself very interested by the end of it.
Yeah, and a healthy open mind and skepticism. So that was good.
So as you mentioned, you've had some big names have actually read your book. They've understood your proposed theory. And they've been very complimentary about it. Do you want to do a little bit of name dropping about the kind of people you're talking about who you must be rather pleased have embraced your ideas in this way?
Yeah, it's I can say Dr. Robert Verkerk. He's an incredible multidisciplinary scientist. He's one. Dr. Nasha Winters, she's got a fantastic thing going on over in America with the metabolic approach to cancer and her institute where she's building a hospital over there, and she's actually training up oncologists. Recently, I got in contact with Professor Angus Dalgleish from the UK. Now, he's very big in conventional circles to do with cancer or oncology. And I delivered my book to him. He read it and got back to me and essentially endorsed what I was doing and gave me some pointers on how to maybe write a different version for scientists, because my book is essentially written for the layperson. Professor Michael Lasanti is another one. Professor Seyfried is aware of my work. He was very supportive of it initially, and he's supportive of it now. However, you know, he has his reservations with certain things, as all scientists will do. But yeah, there's a number of other scientists and clinicians that we're working with.
That's great. That's fantastic. And I understand you've had an opportunity to sort of engage with people on quite a high level in discussing these kind of matters.
Yeah, I mean, both of us have had the opportunity to speak with Ravid Straussman, for instance, leading cancer scientist from Israel. And he was the guy who essentially discovered the tumor-associated microbiome, where he found bacteria and fungi exist within all cancers. So that was a seminal moment, and such a leading scientist in that respect. So there's so many more, and it's just been a wonderful journey to be talking to them and conversing with them. I was also invited to an Oxford salon with Dr. Adil Khan, who's a regenerative medicine doctor. He's pioneering regenerative medicine with stem cells. He came to hear about my theory, I think through you, Robin, actually. You interviewed him.
I did, for this show. Yes, you're right.
And he was part of this salon. He'd been invited by billionaires, a couple of billionaires, to get together with physicists and longevity scientists and clinicians, bring them all together into a hotel in Oxford for a week, all expenses paid for, which is absolutely fantastic. And for it to be a melting pot of ideas from the physicist side to the longevity side. And I was invited by Adil Khan to go to that, where I met Adil Khan and some really incredible thinkers. I did think I would feel out of place, but, you know, I felt at home. And it was just really interesting to be able to be amongst these scientists. And one of the scientists was Charlie Lineweaver, who is the co-author of the atavistic theory of cancer with Professor Paul Davies. So it was really interesting to converse with these guys, and an honour to be invited.
Absolutely right. I can imagine in your back bedroom over those 8 years, this is the stuff of your dreams.
Yeah, like I say, mentioned earlier, it was like being in a movie. You're the sort of person that I kind of was looking, stepping out from myself sometimes, listening to Charlie Lineweaver talk and the other scientists talk, and then I had to slap myself to say, get back in, involve, you're with them. You're not a part away from them. So, yeah, interesting experience.
Mm. Another part of what's been going on the last couple of years is building your own Facebook group. Do you want to just say something about that?
Yeah. So the Facebook group is there to help cancer patients come and speak about the theory and what the implications are for treatment, and for them to come together and to understand their own experiences with each other and help each other out. So it's a platform for clinicians as well. I do have a LinkedIn, a more professional LinkedIn page for clinicians and scientists, which that's growing as well, which is really, really good and interesting. But it's the Facebook group where I'm really active. And it's quite incredible because I've learned a lot from the fantastic people within my group and conversing with other people's groups as well in the cancer space, such as Abby Mitchell's group, Linda Sinclair's, Mark Sean Taylor's, Jay McClellan's. There's a fantastic range of these groups of people discussing different aspects of cancer. But I think for my group, it offers this distinct lens through which to view the disease and maybe consider other possible treatments. And it's just nice that everyone can converge and ask questions and challenge what's going on. And I'm learning from these people as well. So It's great to have this resource.
Yeah. And has it actually prompted any new findings on your part?
It has. I've got this huge document that I list all the new findings I have from the research and from listening from patients and clinicians in my group. It's rather large. I'm looking at possibly adding a second edition to the book, but that won't be for some time yet because there's a lot of information to go here. And a lot of the information just further supports the theory, further supports different treatment options that I wasn't aware of, that people are actually undertaking. And it's just nice to hear the success and maybe not the success. An example would be recently just understanding the TH1 and TH2 response that we seem to get in cancer. And that is the TH1 response is suppressed in cancer. These are T cells essentially that respond to intracellular pathogens. So this response is kind of like subdued in cancer. And then when you look at the data and you look at the details, you start doing research onto why that could be, you can find that actually intracellular fungal pathogens and other pathogens as well, they specifically suppress this Th1 response in order to evade the immune system. So it's little things like that that increase, again, it's an extra bit of supportive evidence. And there's one more as well. I came across the notion of this phrase called vomocytosis. And that's the process by which immune cells expel any fungal pathogens that they've contained in favor of targeting viral pathogens instead. So they prioritize viral pathogens.
Hmm.
And that's because obviously the viruses tend to operate more aggressively and do more damage quite quickly. So it's this interesting parallel, understanding that actually if you have a viral infection, your immune system is going to not just ignore fungal pathogens, but if they are containing them within the white blood cells, they're going to expel them out, which can also partly explain why fungi can colonize different tissues throughout the body and different areas throughout the body. It's just extra little aspects that kind of can help explain other features of the disease and support the theory.
That's very interesting. Never heard about that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so the thing that struck me is in the last decade, there's been the rising of a new breed of what you would call citizen scientists. And there's a few of them about, and you're definitely one of them. It's a very interesting new force in the whole arena. And it's arisen, I think, as a direct response to the influence of money within research. It influences it in various ways, like exactly what gets researched, what results are being looked for, any number of ways, how profitable the resulting science will be. All these things play into what the research is and what the results look like. And the feeling is amongst a large number of the public, growing number anyway, that actually the science is not that much used for actually tackling something like cancer. And so, people have started doing it themselves, essentially, and that's what you've done. You obviously came across the science and didn't think it looked that good, and so you set out to find out something for yourself. What do you think the potential of this movement is? Because it's quite a new thing.
I think it's got fantastic potential because it's also got backing by a number of leading scientists and clinicians who also recognise that while science is complex and the evidence being produced is very detailed and needs to be done, it's not necessarily going or being applied to the right areas. And there's a number of reasons for that. But I think it's got great, great potential because one of the problems is that different disciplines are siloed in the way that they approach complex things like cancer. And there does need to be, from time to time, and throughout history, there's been autodidacts from different disciplines that have upset the narrative and pushed advancements. So sometimes you get disciplines that have this tunnel vision, and sometimes they need to be shaken at the root almost forced to look at things from a different perspective. And I think what people looking from outside these disciplines can have a unique perspective that then gives rise to identifying and solving particular problems.
I think that's definitely true, and it really applies in the case of your bridging of two branches of medical science in order to come up with your theory is a great example of that. Yeah, so I think, there's the two things. There's what you've just described, which is kind of the other view, if you like, that somebody from outside can present. But also, of course, But the other thing that the citizen scientists have is they only have one objective, usually, because they're usually coming from personal experience.
That's true.
Of a disease or whatever. And so they're actually looking for answers. They're not looking for fame or for money necessarily. Well, hopefully they're not. They might get that way in time. But to start with, they're never going to put that effort in other than to save their life or somebody else's life. And so their motivation is much more on message for what actually people with cancer are looking for. People with cancer actually should essentially be shaping the narrative of science and saying, actually, this is what we want you to find out, not being told, oh, we found out, we've worked out a new endpoint to pursue, which is of making, you know, tumours smaller, regardless of whether it makes your life any better or longer. It's a great outcome, so we can make lots of money out of it, so we'll do that. And so, you know, it does remove those kind of bogus endpoints from the whole equation. So that's a healthy thing in my book, of course. Yeah, so in all these discussions you've been having, both in your Facebook groups with other scientists, anybody come up with any major challenges to your theory?
There's been a little bit of resistance in very small pockets, but not really. There's only really one, which was presented by Ravid Straussman, which was that around 3% of tumours that he identified didn't contain fungal pathogens. So the premise is that fungal pathogens are present in all cancers, so in all tissues. However, you'll have metastases occurring, so not all particular tumours appear to be present with fungi. And a similar thing goes with bacteria. However, they all do have a type of microorganism, microbiome. Now, this kind of presents with an opportunity to explain something else, like the abscopal effects, which I'll do in a moment. But the other thing I think we need to just recognize as well is that we don't, I think there's a paper in Nature which was analyzing the microorganisms we have identified, and it estimated that we have only identified around 1%, just under 1% of microorganisms expected to be present on the planet. So there is always this argument of, if we're searching for a fungal pathogen or we're searching for a bacterial pathogen, that we don't yet quite have the technology or the database of knowledge of discovered pathogens to be able to say with any certainty, really, that we've got them all, we can identify them all, so therefore they're not all there.
Right.
Because there's so many that we still have yet to identify. There's many pathogens that live within the body, or many microorganisms, that we can't culture in the lab, so we don't know much about them other than their DNA sequencing. So there's that aspect to it. But also there's this feature called the abscopal effect. And that's where, if you treat the primary tumour and you have metastases, sometimes the other tumours that have metastasized also diminish as well and disappear. Now, this is an unknown, there's no known reason for this. But there is a way you could explain it through the process of my theory. And that is essentially, it's like you look at cancer like a hive mind, and essentially the fungal pathogen is the lead in the hive mind of the primary tumour. And what happens with distant tumours that have migrated is primary tumor communicates directly with those distant tumors through exosomes and various other RNA messaging products. And the notion could be that tissue that's been removed from the immediate primary tumor is still being given the message that there's an imminent fungal infection or bacterial infection. So we need to sustain this Warburg effect. If you were to target the original tumor and eliminate the fungal pathogen, then that signaling from the original tumor dissipates and is no longer. So then that then comes back down to the process of the other tumors are no longer getting that signaling. So they also have no need to continue with the Warburg effect and the proliferative process, and they just diminish.
Mm, Interesting. Yeah, it can explain that. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing, that effect. And as you say, one that nobody's really managed to come up with a decent description of why it works. Look, we've only got a few minutes left. I'd like to talk about one more thing, which is the fact that in the background, ever since your event 2 years ago, we've been beavering away on a project to try and set up some sort of study which will begin to evaluate your theory and to find out whether we can show any kind of direct correlation between fungi and cancer. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just fantastic that so many scientists and clinicians are volunteering their time for this. So as a spin-off from the event that we did together, a number of clinicians and scientists were interested in forming a collaboration where we can all work together in trying to establish, as you say, a trial to test the theory. And for a long period of time now, you've been chairing the meetings. We meet every month to discuss the way forward and how we can implement this in a way that is reflective of our budget, you could say. And these scientists, like I say, they're volunteering their time, which is absolutely fantastic, and does show that they've got an interest in this, and they believe that there might be something worth investigating. But yes, it's been a very slow, long process, because it's an incredibly complicated process to try and establish the parameters we need to establish. But as time has gone on, we're bringing on board incredible scientists and more incredible clinicians who are just increasing our knowledge and understanding of how we go about this in the best way possible.
Yeah, and it's been an amazing process for me too. I'm a non-scientist, so I'm just chairing the thing and trying to sort of herd it along. But considering that it's been done entirely on goodwill so far, and in our spare time, as we say, we've made extraordinary strides. But it's the need for more than goodwill is beginning to become apparent, and we're going to be looking for some money to actually help us to pay for various aspects of the study shortly. So I'm putting it out now just so that anybody who is listening who may want to be philanthropic towards this study can be thinking about it. Do feel free to contact the charity and say so. Obviously, we'll be doing a much more direct appeal when it comes to it, when we're actually ready, and we're not far away from that. But I want people to be aware of the fact that this is a key piece of research which could have a massive impact on the outcomes for cancer patients of any kind of cancer all across the globe. And so it couldn't be much more important that we actually establish whether Mark's theory has got legs or not as quickly as we can. And this is just to be the first step of doing that. Our aim in this study is to produce results which may be interesting enough for somebody to want to fund a much more serious study, which will set out to directly correlate fungi with the inception of cancer, which of course would be a much more ambitious project. But to get interest at that kind of level, which will mean this will be an expensive trial, we need to make a first step, and that's what we're trying to do now. So this is your kind of thing. You've got some spare cash, you have a business maybe that might like to support this, whatever it is, then please get in touch and let me know of your interest. But otherwise, we will be coming back with direct appeals once we're in a position to evaluate exactly how much we're looking for, et cetera. Yeah, so maybe we want to round off, Mark. If you just want to tell us quickly about what you see coming up, I mean, things in the future for you personally, for the theory as a whole, where do you think you're going to be going in the next year?
Yeah, well, I see some more exciting collaborations. I'm looking at also expanding what I'm doing, so possibly courses for the layperson and scientists as well, to get a better understanding of theory in a more concise and easier format. Also possibly to produce an app to help patients navigate their treatment, also to advise on how to look at different aspects of the disease through cancer theory, and just help them through that entire process of being a cancer patient and getting to the end result, really. So the app would be something that I think would be could complement the book and everything else, but would also really benefit cancer patients and even clinicians as well, because we can track data and track what the patients are doing as well, and see if we can gather important information from that.
Fascinating. And I'd like to put in a last word on the technical front, just for people who don't yet know about your theory and how it relates to everything else they do know. An awful lot of people who are listening to this show will be quite naturally aware to some extent of metabolic science. They will have come across the fact that maybe cancer is more than just a genetic aberration, and that it's a process which we've had a hand in through lifestyle and our interaction with toxins, all sorts of things that we've actually, a part of our life's journey, have brought us here. And I just want to say that Mark's theory, it embraces all of that. It doesn't say throw away the whole lot and start again. Here's a completely new idea for cancer. It is a new idea for cancer, but it actually fills in the gap, if you like, that's in metabolic science, which is still doesn't really have all the answers as to why it happens in the first place. And so the hope is that Mark's theory is kind of like the missing key, the missing link to make metabolic science the whole answer to cancer. So, I think it's worth saying that at this point, because I don't want people to be dissuaded from feeling they have to throw away everything they've learned so far. It's certainly not the case. And Mark's book thoroughly embraces all aspects of metabolic science and metabolic approach to cancer. So, there we are. I'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much, Mark, for coming on again and giving us the update. Very good to hear of all the progress. And I wish you more and more exposure and success in the coming year. And that in every way, your theory gets the consideration it deserves.
Thank you for having me on, Robin. It's been a pleasure. And thank you to you and all your wonderful staff at Yes to Life for doing everything that you do for cancer patients.
Great.
Bye-bye.
What an amazing story Mark's is. The very fact that 2 years after launch, no major holes have opened up in his theory is a strong indication that he's onto something important. As I mentioned in the intro, if you're new to cell suppression theory, then a great doorway to understanding it would be to listen to the 6 episodes I originally recorded with Mark. To hear these, go to our website, yestolife.org.uk, choose the radio show from our resources, and on the show page, search for Mark Linton by name. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you found the material interesting and relevant. Please join me again next week if you can for the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.